The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We are coming to you from Fort Worth, Texas. Glad you're along with us for the next hour. I am your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell, and we're getting set to talk some college and pro football with our Under the Helmet segment. It is always a pleasure joining us every week, NFL and Cornhusker great Jason Peter. Jason, hey, we've got a lot to discuss. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing great. Enjoying the sunshine down here. But I tell you what, you know, the month of March, we're typically in this program, this time of year, we're talking college basketball, but the big headline that sustained a lot of continuity throughout the week, we kept hearing about it, is the story and events that continue to unfold at Ohio State with their head coach, Jim Tressel. Two games he's going to be suspended for, fined $250,000 just regarding information and questionable activities that he had known about for quite some time.
Yeah, right now it's only two games and $250,000. I think those were sanctions that the school kind of self-imposed, but the NCAA obviously has room to I think make some bigger punishments or whatever you want to call it for Jim Tressel. It's shocking. It really is. The fact that he knew this was going on. He played football games with ineligible players, and no matter what he says, you'd like to give the benefit of the doubt to the guy because, for the most part, he hasn't done anything, I think, at this level, but he's come out now and said that he didn't want to suspend the players because he didn't want to raise any suspicion to the federal investigation that was going on now. That obviously was an explanation that was concocted, I think, behind closed doors on the campus of Ohio State. But I think as time goes on, we're going to learn more about it. And I wouldn't necessarily think that his punishment is set in stone right now.
Well, you know, Jim Tressel, he's not a rookie coach. It's hard to gloss over this, and the facts are very hard. I mean, here he's been head coach for 25 years, and I have to wonder, the thought that came to my mind is, this is a person that has always seemed to have coached with so much integrity. Did he just receive bad advice and bad counsel, Jason?
You know, that's a possibility. I think sometimes these coaches, and you can't deny it, they have egos, and they feel that they're the one that makes the final decision. I'm not saying that this is the case with Jim Tressel here, but let's face it. I mean, he's not the only guy that feels like he has the most power on campus. You could look across 30, 40 different Division I schools where football is the dominant sport, and they're the ones that fund most of the other athletic teams and even academic programs across the campus. So a lot of these guys feel like, hey, if I feel like this is the right decision, then it's the right decision. And if I feel like I'm not going to get caught here, then by all means, I'm going to go with it, and I'm going to do what I want to do because I'm here to win football games on Saturday, and these are my players, and until they're implicated on something, they're innocent. And obviously, that came back to bite him in the tail, if that is kind of his mindset. But it's shocking. It really is. I mean, I was shocked when I heard this because this isn't just a minor little thing. I mean, you're talking about a federal drug operation here that these players, it doesn't seem like they were directly involved in going out and selling drugs on the street, but the guy who owned the tattoo parlor, the guy that they were swapping memorabilia for, he was the guy who the federal government was looking at with this drug investigation.
Well, the bottom line is the NCAA, they're going to have the final say, and you just have to wonder. I think back just what, a year ago, Dez Bryant, he lost 1 year at Oklahoma State for lying to investigators, and that was something that was not an NCAA violation. But I think of also in the game of basketball, Tennessee's head coach Bruce Pearl. I mean, he's already sat out eight games this year, and he's going to be docked not $250,000, but $1.5 million.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that think he should be fired. This clearly goes against everything that these head coaches preach to these parents when they're sitting in their living rooms trying to recruit them. They sit across and they look these parents in the eyes and they say, first and foremost, your son's coming to my school because I want him to be a good man. I want him to be honest. I want him to live with good values and good morals. Now, I mean, if that's not completely opposite of what you're telling these parents, I don't know what is. But I think if you are going to keep them around, I don't think it's out of the question to suspend this guy for the entire year. You know, this, like I said, goes against the first thing that these coaches are preaching to these parents. You know, it's about education and it's about turning these kids into young men that you can be proud of. And this kind of goes against everything that he's preaching. I mean, what does that show the kids? That you don't own up to something unless you end up getting caught? I mean, that's basically, you know, the example that he's setting.
Well, and I was going to ask you, I mean, what do you think the punishment should be for Ohio State and for Jim Tressel? I mean, I thought I heard you just say that, you know, perhaps the suspension should have been longer.
Yeah, I think it's I think it would be a fair deal to suspend them for the entire year and probably without pay. You know, I think if a kid went through that, he would probably miss the entire year. I know you brought Dez Bryant up, and there have been other guys too that, you know, their eligibility has either taken a huge hit with them either being kicked out of school, with them having to sit numerous games, with them having to sit an entire year. And I don't think that or what Jim Tressel's being accused of here and pretty much what he's admitted, I don't think that that's something where that punishment wouldn't fit. I think it's absolutely doable for the NCAA to say that you have to sit this year out. And then Ohio State obviously is in a predicament there, whether or not they would end up firing them, or do you let somebody move in for a year? Do you just promote somebody from within for the year? But, you know, you're seeing Ohio State, you know, they did not suspend him for spring football because there is a lot of work that's being done in spring football. This is a time when a lot of positions are being won, and you know, the first two games of the season that Ohio State have, you know, they're not national TV-type games. You know, these are games that they should go in and they should win pretty easily, and you can win those games without your head coach, and you can win them without your starting quarterback. But, you know, you look a few games down the road, and I know they come to Lincoln on October 8th to play the Huskers, and certainly they'll have both coaches and players back by then. But, yeah, for me, I think a fair punishment, you know, because so many times when it comes to the NCAA and handing out punishments, it always has to do with the kids. It never has to do with the coaches, you know, when they jump ship, when they get a better offer. You know, these coaches are making $4 or $5 million a year, and for some of them, you know, they leave that school because they're going to get offered $6 and $7 million at another school, and the kids are kind of left there. But if a kid goes out and you know, takes a couple hundred bucks because he's having a hard time paying, you know, rent off of the scholarship check that he gets. And some of these kids, let's face it, they don't come from backgrounds where the parents can float them an extra $1,000 or $2,000 to get by. But if a kid goes out and does it, what happens to him? He's either done at the school because the school says we don't tolerate that, or you know, he's suspended for a year. So I think it would be a fair punishment for them to make Tressel sit out the year.
You're listening to the familiar voice, Jason Peter, with our Under the Helmet segment this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We do want to pause and direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. You can check out all of Jason's information at his website, which is jasonpeter.com. And you're talking about the NC2A. You know, at times they've been so, I don't know if the word's inconsistent, but unpredictable in terms of handing down punishments. You really have to wonder what kind of punishment that they will give Ohio State.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see, because I think the one thing that you could say about the way they handle their disciplinary actions is they're inconsistent, and you never really understand the rhyme or reason as to why they hand out certain punishments. But, you know, for me, I don't know what else would be worse for a head coach here. I mean, this isn't a personal matter. You know, Jim Tressel's not, you know, having an affair or something on the side. I mean, this was a federal investigation that involved some of his players. And for him to know that that was going on, for him to continue to play these players and not say anything until it became a bigger issue, I think, you know, that should go against everything that college sports stands for.
Ohio State's head football coach Jim Tressel certainly facing his biggest crisis of his career. Obviously, this is so embarrassing. How does this affect his legacy and how he will be remembered when he does retire eventually?
I mean, let's face it, winning, I think, cures or fixes any type of controversy. And I'm certainly somebody who thinks that people deserve second chances. And even in, when you talk about the United States, I think people always love a good comeback story, and you know, we're always giving second and third and fourth chances. And I don't know if that's a problem in our society or if it's one of the things that makes our society great, is that there are kind of the rags to riches type stories, and the people that overcome the adversity and the obstacles that they've either brought into their life as, on their own, or stuff that they've been dealt with since birth. But Jim Tressel will fall on his feet. He always will, no matter what happens. He's a heck of a football coach, and he's got a track record of winning football games. And in the end, I think unless this type of behavior continues, I think people will ultimately forget about it. And obviously everything depends on how much longer he coaches. If he decided I had enough and I'm going to retire tomorrow, then, you know, certainly this would be something that a lot of people remember. But if he continues to coach for another 10, 15 years, and he continues to win games, and he wins a national championship or two, then I think this is just a small blurb in the Jim Tressel legacy.
Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. We do want to take time to recognize our premier corporate sponsor, our friends and folks at Western Company of Texas. You can go to their website at wct.us.com. And another story that has certainly mushroomed and made big, big headlines, of course, is Tiki Barber wanting to make a comeback to the NFL. I understand that he is needing some money these days.
That's what we're hearing, is that's a big reason as to why the 35-year-old running back is coming back into the league, that he is flat broke. And I guess when you leave your wife, who's 8 months pregnant, when you leave her and you run off with a 23- or 24-year-old intern, I could completely understand why maybe the court might side with the financial division of all your assets and your net worth. But either way, I think, you know, back when he walked away from the game, you know, there was talks that he was going to NBC, and, you know, there was something, a contract in I think the ballpark of $1 million or $2 million, and clearly that wasn't the case. You know, it was certainly a good salary, but then when you have child support that you have, and you have a divorce, and there's a divorce settlement, that money, it really goes fast. And, you know, he's not the only guy to have left the pregnant wife or the pregnant spouse. Another NFL guy, and probably the biggest name in the NFL, or one of them right now, Tom Brady, left his girlfriend, fiance, mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what they were, but Bridget Moynihan, who was the actress, and he went off and had another child and got married with Gisele Bündchen. But, you know, obviously right now for Tiki, when you bring yourself back into the spotlight like this, all of your dirty laundry is going to be aired. But a lot of people are questioning why a guy who is 35 years old would want to come back to a league where most NFL executives don't respect running backs that are over the age of 30. You know, it's pretty highly likely that no team is going to sign Tiki Barber to a contract that pays him $5 million or $6 million a year. He's probably going to have to go in, and you know, there might be a team that signs him for $1 million, $1.5 million for a year. And you know, he still has to go out and he still has to make the team. I mean, let's not kid yourself. When you don't practice your craft for years and years and years, your skills diminish and you're not the player that you were when you left the game.
But so what about, let me jump in here, Jason. What about Michael Vick? I mean, he landed on his feet very nicely this year, had an outstanding season. He had been away from the game for a while. And, you know, I mean, Tiki Barber, I mean, he's what? The Giants' career rushing leader. And he was 22nd best in league history, Jay.
Yeah, and I'm a huge Giants fan, so I guess it's hard for me to say that. I mean, Michael Vick was out for 2 years. You know, Tiki Barber's been out for what, I don't know,
four years.
Mm-hmm. And Michael Vick was able to spend a year just kind of sitting and watching from the sidelines, and then he was, you know, put into this starter role when Kevin Cobb went down. So there was a period there where he was able to get his feet wet. What are you going to do with Tiki Barber? Are you going to let him sit on the sidelines for a year or two getting his feet wet and then break him in when he's like 37 years old again? So, you know, it is a little different. I mean, you're talking about two different types of positions. Certainly they both, when you talk about Michael Vick, he relies on his athleticism a lot. And I'm not saying Tiki Barber can't have some type of success when he comes back, if he does come back and makes a team, that he won't have success. He very well could, but I think there was probably still a little more upside and there was still more room for Michael Vick to grow. He's not as old as Tiki Barber. And, you know, quarterbacks, even though Michael Vick's a running quarterback and he takes a lot of shots, running backs take a shot every single play.
Good point.
If you're getting the ball, you're getting hit. If you're not getting the ball, 9 times out of 10, you're still getting hit. A quarterback, he can hand the ball off. He can run away. The quarterback can drop back in the pocket. He could throw the ball. He could not get hit. So two different types of positions when you talk about getting hit on a regular basis.
Tiki Barber, the rise and fall, as one of the headlines read, the rise and fall of a Giants legend. Okay, well, let's talk about a subject you always like to hit on, and that, of course, is talking about your Nebraska Cornhuskers. I see that they're going to play Iowa on Friday, right after Thanksgiving. This is kind of developing, as you had said last week on our show, Jay, developing into a rivalry.
Yeah, and I just think it's a natural rival when that team is your neighboring state. And there is a large part, I think, of Hawkeye Nation that feels they're on the same level as Nebraska and that they deserve the same amount of respect. And, you know, the way that you get that respect is you win football games and you win championships. And, you know, Nebraska hasn't won a championship in a long time, but let's face it. I mean, tradition plays a huge part in how teams are perceived nowadays. I mean, you could have a school like Florida that could be unsuccessful. And when I say unsuccessful, it just means not winning championships. They could still win 10, 11 games a year. But it's still not considered, I think, successful. And that's the same thing as Nebraska. I mean, they've played in the past two Big 12 championship games, haven't been successful in them. And I think if you ask most Nebraska fans, they still wouldn't consider Nebraska being back. You know, they certainly have gotten better since the Callahan years. But for Nebraska fans, they won't be happy until they're competing for national championships and winning conference championships year in and year out. And Iowa, I think, wants to be at that level. Iowa fans, I think, want to have those same sort of expectations. So I think when Iowa fans see maybe the respect or more respect that Nebraska gets than, say, what Iowa gets, I think it irks them a little bit. So, you know, this is a game that's going to come at the end of the season, and I think the conference hopes that this game will have, you know, conference championship implications. And like I said, when you have that natural neighboring state kind of going along with it, I think it does make for a heated rival.
It'll be a lot of fun to watch. We'll keep our eye on that game. Only got about 60 seconds. Just your thoughts on your Huskers being ousted out of the first round of the Big 12 tournament with basketball. I know Doc Sadler was disappointed, but perhaps you guys will make another round at the NIT again.
Yeah, it's a shame because there was so much hope out here following that victory they had against the University of Texas. You know, a lot of people felt like, oh, maybe we're getting over the hump.
Right.
And they controlled their own destiny at that point, and they just followed it up with a couple losses, and they didn't play well down the stretch. And then being ousted in the first round of the Big 12 tournament, I think a lot of people are back to questioning whether or not Doc is the right guy. And I know Doc a little bit, and he's the type of guy that you'd want to send your son to go play for. He's a guy who demands absolutely maximum effort every time you step on the court. I think right now it's just a matter of getting the right amount of players to be able to handle what he's asking. You know, Nebraska's not a hotbed for basketball recruiting, and especially with the facilities. So hopefully with the new facilities coming, hopefully Doc is still around, that Nebraska basketball can get to another level.
Jason, we appreciate your time. We hit on a number of subjects. We look forward to catching up with you here in the next week, okay?
Thanks for having me on, E.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. Stay close.